Well, hello everybody. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast presented by Viva the Matadors. You are on once again with Al B. Shore. And with me, I'm my right-hand man, Dylan Smiles. What's up, Dylan?
What is up, Albie? What's up, Red Raider Nation? And what's up, Jeremy?
That's right. We got Jeremy Gillen with us, unfortunately.
The left-handed man that you love, but you never use. What's up?
That sounded dirty.
Yeah, that's kind of where my mind went to.
Trying to go with the right-hand thing? Yeah, come on.
Well, guys, we're laughing now, but we weren't laughing after the game that happened. Tech goes down to Iowa State. It's 40-31, 9-point loss. The game was tied in the fourth quarter. Close game all around. I mean, it was close. No team had more than a 10-point lead the entire game. First thoughts, Dylan.
For the third year in a row, we can't get past Iowa State. Alan Bowman looked human in this game. Kind of went back to getting a lot of penalties that shot us in the foot. Something happened to us a lot in the past that we got away from, but came back, and that's penalties and mistakes by Alan Bowman really cost us the game.
What about you, Jerm?
Yeah, when the offense adhered to its identity that we've been kind of going on this whole year of like time of possession, we looked really good. But when that started to break down, we looked really bad. Really impressed with the defense and how they kind of held on to it as long as they could. Really disappointed in Bowman, but, you know, freshman mistakes on the road, it's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, Dylan, you said that Bowman looked human. I thought he looked trash. He didn't look good at all to me. I mean, because the thing about it is we lost 40-31, and two of those touchdowns, one was defensive, one was special teams. Offense really didn't come to play. And when you're saying offense really didn't come to play, who was the main guy that didn't come to play? It was really Bowman. Vashner played well. Wesley played well. I will say the running game wasn't there, and that had a lot to do with the O-line not being able to really get much going. But Bowman looked bewildered from the get-go. And the only other time I really saw him look like this was in the first half against West Virginia. And so now we have a whole game and a half where Bowman isn't the high-profile stud quarterback that we've seen every other game. And I think a big thing with him, and this is what I figured out, is that he makes bad defenses look bad and good defenses look good. So when you're a team like Iowa State, and West Virginia doesn't even have a great defense, but he made them look good. So when you even have a decent defense like that, he's going to struggle. And so it does put me at a little uneasy going against Texas, because Texas does have a good defense, even though they didn't show it this weekend. But that's the thing with Bowman, is he gets rattled very easily. When he gets rattled very easily, he has a lot of shimmick in him.
I would not be upset with comparing Bowman to Shimonek yesterday, but like as a whole, I think he's got a little more. Well, see, I can't. When I start saying something, I think about a play, and I'm like, well, you know what? Maybe he does. You know, he's got a higher ceiling than Shimonek does. Yesterday was definitely just a blast from the past in the worst way. But he's definitely got a high ceiling. And if you got a chance to see interviews with Kingsbury today, I believe it was, you know, it's something that they're focusing on, is just getting in the film room and just getting ready for Oklahoma. I mean, just taking the next step. And that's the best thing you can do at this point.
Yeah, I mean, nothing wrong. I don't think he's Shimonek. I think he definitely has a higher ceiling than Shimonek. He's an 18-year-old. Shimonek was 23 when he was playing. So, you know, much big difference. But when I say that, I'm more so saying that the fact that he had happy feet in the pocket. Bowman's done this all year. I complained about this in the first freaking game, Dylan. Bowman throws off of his back foot and looks so goofy when throwing, but has been working up until today. He has got to learn to step into the throws. Mahomes used to do the same thing. And that was one of the critiques that I had with Mahomes back in the day. But with Mahomes, he'd throw off his back foot and still throw a strike on the money. Bowman ain't Mahomes. So he can't be – the back foot throws just – the ball sails like it does with everybody else. It sails, and that's where at least two of his picks were just from him throwing off of his back foot into the defender's hands.
Yeah, I think what we'll see from this week is how will Bowman learn from these mistakes, and will he respond next week? Because it's not something we've seen from Bowman yet. He hasn't had a bad game yet. So it'll be interesting to see how he comes back next week.
Even worse, this is giving good tape for defenses that are going to be playing Tech soon. So Oklahoma, Texas, Kansas State. You know, Marcel, Iowa State's Marcel Spears, the linebacker, keyed in. Like, just having him to watch Bowman's eyes led to him getting those two easy interceptions that did come off, you know, just a terrible decision to throw off your back foot.
Yeah, the funny thing about that is Bowman's actually been pretty impressive with looking off defenders before. So I don't know what it is about this game that you know, they just had him bewildered, and credit, kudos to Matt Campbell and his staff and game planning to really throw Bowman off his course. I mean, but as bad as game that Bowman was having, fourth quarter was tied. It was 31-31. Tech had the ball, and Bowman made the worst play. Oh my God.
You're talking about the play action fail in the end zone?
The intentional grounding in the end zone. That was one of the worst quarterback mistakes I've seen in a long while. And not because of the mistake itself, but the time of the game, the point of the game, that lost the game. Like that play right there, even though, you know, don't get me wrong, the game wasn't over. There was still less than 5 minutes. There was still, you know, over 4 minutes to go in the game. We could have done a 3 and out and got the ball back, but it felt over once he got that safety. An awful play. He knew it the second the referees were going to come in together. And it made it worse. If you watch the replay, he off of the play action, he backpedals for at least 5 yards where he could have thrown it. And had he gotten intentional grounding, it wouldn't have been a safety. But he doesn't throw it until he's in the end zone. And it's just like, oh, it was a terrible, terrible, like an epitome of a freshman mistake. It was a high school mistake.
I think that play was the culmination of tension that had been building the whole game. So first of all, the play action, in my mind, that's a bad call. We hadn't got the run game established at all outside of a couple of good, you know, Tajon Henry runs or even Bowman's scramble. Backs up, because at that point, the offensive line had not been doing as good a job as they had been usually doing. So Bowman's getting a lot of pressure. So of course he's going to back up because he was afraid. He shouldn't, because it was good. It was good blocking that play, of course, but he still backs up out of that fear. And then no awareness at that point in the game. And it all just came crumbling down. Like you said, Albert, I mean, at that point it felt over. Like there's no way we're coming back.
So, and you said that he was getting pressure all game. I actually thought O-line did a decent job of protecting him. They didn't do a good job in the run game. But most of the pressure that he felt was his own doing. He backpedaled into pressure a lot instead of stepping up in the pocket. There was a lot of times that the tackle did a good job of pushing the end to the outside, to where a quarterback is supposed to just step in, just step up, go behind your best two players or your center and your guard,
right.
Going right behind them. But he continually, and again, he's 18 years old, so his first mindset is, guy coming towards me, let me keep backing up. And then I thought a lot of his pressure was his own doing.
That's a good point. I think fundamentally this is where we see kind of Bowman's freshmanness really be emphasized, and that in past games where he's really shined, not only against bad defenses, but he's trusted his linemen, who are kind of a veteran front for him, and he's trusted them, and he's stayed in the pocket, and he's made good plays. When he doesn't play well is when he starts to put the pressure on himself and starts to panic and try to jump around and make a move and then make a play with his feet. Well, not with his feet, but getting out of, like, pressure that's not there. That kind of phantom pressure on a budding quarterback is problematic in games, especially up in Jack Trice.
Yeah, I mean, and we can also talk about this, is that Tech went into Jack Trice, had a game where they got a special teams touchdown, got a defensive touchdown. The punter played fantastic. I mean, Dalton Panizzolo had Iowa State pinned the entire game. We had a trick play go for 10 yards. Defense did a fairly good job with what they could do, and yet we still lose by 9. I think there's only a lot of people going to pin this on Kingsbury. I don't. I think, you know, at the end of the day, in my opinion, Bowman kind of wet the bed. Is how much you can do when your quarterback throws for 3 picks and then does a game-losing safety.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So... but I will say this loss did bring out the Fire Cliff Birds. So they were active after the game. A lot of people saying that he just can't win these type of games. Something about these games, he just can't do it. Is that how y'all are feeling?
No, I put it almost all of it on Bowman. Like a good chunk of this game, like you said, it's just hard to win a game in the Big 12 when you throw 3 interceptions. I think he Cliff was outcoached by Matt Campbell in this game, but I don't think that was like the deciding factor in this game.
I'd agree that Kingsbury was outcoached by Campbell, but I wouldn't say either of them coached poorly. I'm really along with you guys that Bowman kind of gave this game away. I saw a lot on message boards before the game that, you know, Kingsbury's inept play calling is going to be what blows this game, and it ultimately just turned out to be, you know, Bowman's timidness.
So I will ask you all this then. Some people also call for Jet Duffy to come in the game. Were y'all that far down?
First of all, Jet Duffy did come in this game twice.
Not as a trick play guy. I mean, as a quarterback. Are y'all on the Jet train or not?
I'm not. Nah. You know me, I'm not.
Dylan's not. That means I'm not. I will say this. Something that I've learned over the years, I've just talked to multiple people that have played the quarterback position, and there's something to be said about keeping the faith in your starter. Yeah, a lot of people who don't play football just believe like, oh, if he's not doing well, just pull him out. No problem. Teach him a lesson for sucking. But what that does like to the mentality of the actual player is it really breaks them down and kind of makes them unsure and unfaithful to the coach staff. And there's just a lot of intricacies that I think go into pulling your starter that would ultimately just hurt Bowman in the future. And it's easy to it's easy to look past that, look over that if you're not involved in that kind of atmosphere, if you're not involved in the very intimate side of college football. But I don't think that Jet coming in, it may have solved, it may not, I mean, we don't even know, but it may have solved an offensive lull, but over time, I think it would have been more problematic for Bowman's, you know, character building and other items like that. So I don't think it's always the easiest. It may seem like the easiest choice to pull a starting quarterback, but ultimately I think it just does more damage than it does good.
You know why that's the case, Jeremy? Because quarterbacks are pansies. They're pansies. They're soft. Every other position we get pulled when we're trash. But no, you got to protect the quarterback. But I agree. I actually agree. As you know me, I love watching Jet fail and when he succeeds. So, but it would have one. I don't think we would have won this game regardless. And two, it just would have ruined Bowman for the future. He seems to be the future, and so let him make his mistake. So, Jeremy, the reason why we asked you on this pod was because we wanted to hear your tears. How depressing is it for you to lose to Iowa State once again?
Stop dragging me into this, man. Okay. I'll give you something because this is the only reason I'm here, apparently. Yeah, man, this sucks. This honestly sucks. It hurts. It stings. That whole game, I'm just sitting there like, this is our year. Like, we're stopping them. The defense was giving me hope. You know, I'm a big defensive guy. So the fact that we were holding, you know, their Messiah Purdy to three and outs here and there, it was just enthusiastic. It was very great. Made a good breakfast. I got my whole day ready. And then when Bowman threw that pass and it became the intentional grounding in the end zone for the safety, I just turned off the TV. I was like, you know what? My day is over. it ruined it. Now we got to deal with the but I will be fair. I haven't heard a lot from Iowa State fans. There's a couple trolls out there that have kind of come up to the Viva Twitter, but I've ignored them wholeheartedly. I think the fact that, you know, Tech's fighting spirit outside of Bowman, like the defense and special teams especially, I think Iowa State being worried the whole game until there in the end has given us a little bit of rapport. I mean, you even saw like wide right giving us some kudos for Wesley's insane catches where he's like climbing up a ladder that doesn't exist. So this wasn't as bad as like, say, maybe a 66-10 performance. It's made me hopeful that maybe next year, maybe it. But, you know, ultimately, I'm just trying to look past it.
You know the reason why? I kind of figured out why Tech fans and Iowa State fans kind of in the past few years had a little thing, a little not a rivalry because we don't really care about them, nor do they care about us.
It's
a little tip. I figured it out. It's because neither fan base respects each other. So, like, do you give a crap about Iowa State?
No.
And if you ask Iowa State fans, they really don't care about us either. Right. And so because of this, neither fan base respects each other. And so when you talk to them about us. They're like, who the F is Tech? We don't care about them. You talking to us about them? They're like, Korn? I don't know about that. And so I think that's the reason why we had a little tiff. This game, I think, gained respect from both fan bases. So I think that's the reason why it's not as much. I think Iowa State and Alex said, like, oh, okay, you know, Tech, y'all fought as hard. And Tech were like, you know what, Iowa State, y'all actually might be something.
Right. I think you got a point there. A little bit of respect building for the I mean, we've only played them, what is it, 16 times total or something like that. It's not a lot.
Yeah, we've – so this, I think, was the 18th meeting. Tech has won 11 of those. And so – but I truly think this was – because, I mean, losing to Iowa State the last 2 years was like for us was crap. We suck. We lost to Iowa freaking State. This year was more so Iowa State's a good team. Like, that's how I came off of this game. I'm like, okay, well, we lost, but it's not – they're a good team. They deserve the win. Last 2 years, I was like, damn, we suck.
I mean, it could be argued that they're the second best team in the conference right now.
They're the hottest team in the conference. That's for sure. I don't know about...
Okay, Dylan.
I mean, they did just beat West Virginia and us.
Yeah, that's what I said. I mean, man, if they didn't start a Brock Purdy at the beginning of the year, who knows about this team? I mean, yeah, you're right. They are playing really well. They still have to play Oklahoma. I have another question for y'all. If Zeb Nolan would have started, how much did we beat Iowa State by?
Oh, with that defense though, I don't know.
We'd have scored 31.
Well, that's true. So I think you'd, but then a lot, you know, what is it? We're giving them 14 points off of turnover. No, we're not. Because then they had the offense come out. Dude, I think we beat them by about 10.
I agree.
Zeb Nolan is trash. Good job, yeah. Brock.
He sucks. But unfortunately, he sucked too much. He sucked just enough for them to say, you know what, let's bring in Brock Purdy.
Right. It's going to happen to us twice this year. They got Purdy, and then next week we're going to have the, which we'll get into, like Stoops. Like, if only Stoops would have stayed.
I know. Golly, if only Stoops would have stayed. Dang, he sucked too much. It's another thing that the Longhorns ruined, okay? Yeah. Everybody in the Big 12 had a good thing going. With Mark Stoops being the DC, and they had to go and put up 45, and everyone realized, who the hell let Sam Ehlinger get 45 points? Oh crap, we gotta fire him! Freaking yep. UT.
And now the back half of their schedule is getting steamrolled.
Oh, UT always ruins it for everybody else. I tell you,
they've been doing it for a long time. Yep.
So guys, how about we go ahead and look at what happened around the Big 12 this week? A certain game is a certain. To put a smile on your faces.
Yeah.
So we already talked about West Virginia beating Baylor on Thursday and beating them by a lot, 44 to be exact. We also had another beatdown happening. Oklahoma beat down K-State. Any surprises? Any comments?
No surprise.
No comments.
All right. next up, we had a big upset. Now, if you remember, so Dylan, I called Oklahoma State being in a close field goal game with Texas. I actually, the morning of the game, switched my pick to Texas. I don't know if you saw that. I switched to Oklahoma State. I switched to Oklahoma State the morning of the game, but I picked Texas on the pod because this game was the ultimate trap upset game for Texas. And I figured they always play down to their competition. And big game for Oklahoma State. Big win for them. Gundy was pretty pumped up about it. What did y'all think?
I thought you were going to say you switched your pick back. Because in the pod, you did say that Oklahoma State was going to put up a fight in this game.
Yeah, no, I picked Texas in the pod, but I switched to Oklahoma State the morning of.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, you know what? I'm such an old grandpa. I literally fell asleep before the end of this game and had to watch the tail end of it the next morning. Like, it was, I think it was 41-41 when I fell asleep. I woke up and I saw the rest of it. It's like, damn, that was a really good game. And you know what? UT, they heard me in the pod say that this was the game where they were going to pull ahead and really, really show out. And of course, they put up a big stinker against Oklahoma State.
I like what you said, Albert, how Texas plays down to its opponents. This was the ultimate trap game because this was kind of like the litmus test was, oh, is Texas back? Like, if they were back, then they should have steamrolled a team that is in the lower half of the Big 12. But no, they let Oklahoma State score 17 in the first quarter, 14 in the second quarter. They let them get out fast and early, and they could only answer with – I mean, they scored one touchdown in the first, one touchdown in the second, one touchdown in the third. In the fourth, they got two touchdowns. Like, it took them forever to get going. And that's something I've actually appreciated about Texas this year is that they've got a lot of grit when it comes to the second half, or at least Ellinger does. You know, grinding it out and trying to come back and, like, combat problems. But they let Oklahoma State get out fast, too early. And, damn, Dylan, you really missed it with Gundy coming on the field and Herman was blowing up. And then
– oh, yeah.
Got the –
Herman's – oh, golly.
Oh, man.
I had Longhorn fans up my ass about me talking about Herman at the beginning of the year because of the fact that he's a prick. He's a prick. I mean, it is what it is. Like, it's he. Okay, here's the thing. He's a douche. Now he might do some, you know, noble things here and there, and I'm sure he, you know, gives to charity and stuff like that. But you look at the guy and you're like, man, you're a douche. Like, you see,
you just look at him and you think, ah, what a douche.
Yeah, like that's it is. And Texas picked the worst time to lose, also, because their next three games are home against West Virginia, at Texas Tech, home against Iowa State. That is three games are going to have a tough game matchup against. They probably didn't think it was going to be that tough to start the year. Oh, and then not to mention, you know, the dastardly game they're going to have in Lawrence, Kansas. It's going to be a tough one for them, of course.
Kansas coming up with another win.
Yeah. Speaking of Kansas,
segue.
The Kansas Jayhawks won their first conference game since 2016, where they beat Texas. This time, woo-hoo, they beat TCU. Stupid Horned Frogs.
I feel so bad for Horned Frog fans this year. Like, they went from, you know, conference hopefuls to zeros. Nobody. Losing to Kansas.
Under Kansas.
Remember a few weeks ago, we were talking about Sean Robinson, and I think, Dylan, I think it was you that was saying, you know, when are they going to go to their backup? And I think now we see why they didn't. Michael Collins sucks.
Jeez.
He's not good. And so he's, oh, my goodness. So no wonder they never bench Sean Robinson when they got this guy in the fold.
You're not lying, dude. You are not lying. All the credit to Jayhawks. They hung in there, and oh boy, to come away with that. I really don't. I've seen people saying, like, this just hurts Tech. You know, what does this do to Tech's you know, strength of comp, whatever. Like, it's not good. That's what I said. I said, you know what? The where we are, really, who cares? Because, like,
yes,
well, you, team chaos. Oh, who cares?
This is going to hurt us when it comes to the playoffs. We're not going to the damn playoffs.
you know, I was going to put Texas Tech in, but TCU lost to Kansas.
It's great when a rival loses to Kansas, point blank. And I've been saying for a while now, I think with the exception of Texas, TCU has kind of become our number two rival. Like, And the hate I have for TCU grows every year, and not to mention they are our main rival when it comes to baseball. And so, you know, other sports, I just want to beat them really bad. And them losing to Kansas is glorious.
Yeah, I don't care what it does for our conference. It was a fun sight to see.
Yeah. So now with all this chaos going on, what the hell is going to happen with the Big 12 going forward? I mean, so now we had a situation where the only team that was undefeated in conference just lost to a bottom five team in the conference. Iowa State seems for real. Kansas just won a game. West Virginia went from looking like trash the week before to looking dominant against Baylor. And the only constant is that Oklahoma is still really good on offense. What do y'all think about the conference going forward?
Let's just make it obvious for everybody. We have a three-way tie for first between West Virginia, Oklahoma, and Texas. And then you've got the middling sort column. Here we go again. Iowa State and Texas Tech are tied. And then at 3-2 in conference. Then you have Oklahoma State and Baylor are tied, 2-3. And then you have a three-way tie for last between TCU, Kansas, Kansas State.
The way I see it, there's really – Oklahoma, I think, is the clear favorite at this point. And I think second is totally up for grabs. I think Iowa State, Texas Tech, West Virginia, any of those three teams could be second in the conference.
So here's the thing. So for the Big 12, the Big 12 powers that be want a playoff team, right? Well, now you have a situation where you have only Oklahoma and West Virginia, the only two teams with one loss, right? And they still have to play each other.
Right.
Texas now has two losses. And they still, like I just told you, with the next three games were West Virginia Tech and Iowa State. No way they finished the season at two losses. So now, if you're the Big 12, not only that, to make matters worse, the Big 12 idiots decided to add a championship game, which means that Oklahoma could win out, right, giving West Virginia their second loss, and then lose the next week, and everybody has two or three losses. And
yeah,
totally kicks themselves out of the playoffs. Does the Big 12 get a playoff team in?
No.
Oklahoma would have to win out. I think that's the only way the Big 12 gets a team in.
Here's the thing. I think that Big 12 every year just eats itself in such a way that is glorious if you're not really trying for the playoffs, right? Because, I mean, like right now, so let's be really fanciful. Texas Tech wins out. We end up maybe second behind Oklahoma, lose Oklahoma in the whatever. But we've beaten Oklahoma, so Oklahoma doesn't get in. Okay, other than team chaos. Iowa State wins out, but Iowa State's already lost three games. No way they're going to let them into the conference championship then. Okay, whatever. Texas wins out, has to play Oklahoma probably again. But then they've got two losses. Then you got that really difficult question of, like, does a two-loss team really belong in the playoffs when they lost to people like Oklahoma State and then Minnesota at the beginning of the year? I think in this conference – you have to win. I think you get one game you can lose if you're going to make the playoffs. Because if you lose two, the committee – this just isn't a conference built for the playoffs. It's a conference built for, like, creating really good offense and now some good defenses, like good numbers. But as far as the playoff goes, I don't think we're really fit unless you've got a steamrolling program. And that's just nobody this year.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I think that there's only – two teams that could even possibly get in, that's Oklahoma and West Virginia, and they both still have to play each other, possibly twice. So that's, and to me, not only that, but also throwing a wrench to the whole playoff thing is Notre Dame. Notre Dame's right now undefeated, and their remaining schedule is Northwestern, Florida State, Syracuse, which is surprisingly good, and a USC team who's 500. And they don't have a stupid championship game they have to do. And so even if they, let's say they lost to Syracuse or USC, they're still good. They only have one loss. So that's really, at this point, I kind of put Notre Dame as an automatic lock for the playoffs. They have the notoriety. People are going to want to see them in. And they're probably going to be undefeated at most one loss. So that takes a wrench out of it. Then you have the fact that SEC is probably going to get two teams in, right? You're probably going to see Alabama is definitely going to be in. They're going to win the national championship, being real. But either LSU or Georgia is probably going to join them, right? So then now you only got one spot left. You got one spot left for somebody either from the Big Ten, the ACC, the Big 12, or the Pac-12. Well, not the Pac-12, but either
not the Pac-12. The Big 12.
So either the ACC, the Big 12, or the Big Ten, right? So it's either going to be the Big 12 champ, Clemson, who's currently undefeated, or you got Michigan or Ohio State. One of them will probably get in.
Or
either Michigan, Ohio State, or Clemson will probably get in ahead of any Big 12 team.
Or the reigning national champions, the Golden Knights.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Never.
That is not going to happen. Even though I do think they deserve a chance. I think they deserve a chance. Give them a chance to get whooped by Alabama in the first game. That'd be fun.
Bama.
Answer a lot of questions. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, listen, here's the thing. Alabama's going to blow out whoever they play in the semifinal anyway. At least give it to UCF and let them, you know, have some fun with it.
Right. So here's where Mike Leach comes into play. He mentioned earlier this weekend about how it's surprising that people in – I can't remember where he said. You know, he's always coming up with weird things to say. Surprised that people in, like, X whatever can understand that we need, like, a larger playoff, but the people that create this whole thing want to keep it at four. You guys agree? Does that help like UCF get in, get a chance to get rolled?
Well, it should have been an eight to start off with. I mean, eight's the perfect number. Right? I think it'll be an eight eventually. I think they're just doing some BS. You know how, like, you're waiting and you're like, oh, let's dip our toe in the water first. Okay. Then we'll expand it to eight. That's what I believe is going to happen. Eight's the perfect number. I think you get it to eight. And then you might see me personally. I personally am a fan of do a thing of eight, conference champions automatically get in. You have two at-large bids and a group of five bid. And that also gives that group of five bid will probably be the 8 seed. And that gives whoever's number one in the nation virtually a bye. You reward the team that's number one in the nation and give them a chance to play that group of five team, you know, and give that group of five team a chance to, one, get their asses kicked to start this whole thing off. But or if they're really real, they, you know, you got to face to be the best, you got to beat the best.
Right, I like it.
Why dip your toes in when you can just do a freaking cannonball? 8 teams, let's do this thing.
This may be the year that gets louder. Because like I said, I truly do believe you're going to have this year. This will be the year where three conferences are left out. With Notre Dame being in there, with I think there's going to be two SEC teams, and then let's say Clemson, you know, or Michigan. This will be the year that I really think you're going to have three conferences left out. Usually you have one representative from each conference, only one conference left out, only the Pac-12 or the Big 12 left complaining. But now when you got a situation where the Big 10, Pac-10, 12, and Big 12 are all complaining, now this will be the first year where everybody screams about an 18 playoff. All right, well, y'all, it's been real. It's been fun. For the Red Raiders, Saturday, it was not real fun. You got anything else to say, Jerome?
Yeah, between Mike Gundy and Tom Herman, who wins in a fight?
Gundy.
Bring on the mullet.
Gundy's kicking the crap out
Scrappy
of him.
Scrappy mullet, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Herman's bigger than Gundy, and maybe he might use his weight on, but Gundy's kicking the crap out of Herman. Let's be real. All right.
Beating up the douche. I love it.
Yes, for sure. What you got, Dylan?
Between a fight between Abby and a panda, who would win?
Well, panda, for sure.
Panda.
Yeah, it's a panda for sure. For one, I'm not fighting. I'm not fighting no panda. I'm gonna run away. I don't do that. Okay. For one, all right. For two, but if something happened, if I don't have a gun by me, yeah, I'm just gonna take that out.
Okay.
For me, congratulations on the Red Sox for winning the World Series. They haven't won it yet, but let's be real. The Dodgers aren't gonna do it, so. The World Series was truly the ALCS, and the Red Sox keep crapping my Astros anyway. Also, MLS playoffs are about to heat up for everybody that doesn't care about soccer. Other than that, that's about it. We got the preview Oklahoma pod coming up later this week. So big game for Tech, big game, but we'll get into that a little bit later. Jeremy, where can the people find you?
You can find me at Jeremy Dane. Not going to tell you how to spell it. You can figure it out. Or just follow the Viva account. That's where I live.
Yeah, no one is going to know how to spell your first name. Perfect. Dylan, where can the people find you?
I failed to figure out how to spell your first name all the time. Mine is D-Y-L-A-N. On Twitter, DylanSmythe92.
How do you spell Smythe?
Don't worry about it.
There you go.
y'all are both enemy of the people, okay? As always, you can find me at Mr_AlbieShore, AlbieExhore, and on the Viva the Matadors account. Me and Jeremy usually team up and rock and roll. All right. So, for Jeremy and Dylan, this is Albie reminding you all to stay wrecked, people.